Now we're holding on Nun Omid Bey's, the third line from the bottom. Now continuing with the discussion of punctures in internal organs that make the animal trefa, the Mishnah said hemsis or vesicosis. The hemsis or the vesicosis, if either of them is punctured and the puncture extends into the body cavity. We learned before the vesicosis is the second of the animal's four stomachs. Vesicosis literally means the place of the cups, because the inner lining of it is made of a bunch of cup-like indentations. That stomach is where the animal's cud is formed, and then it regurgitates the cud and chews it. So that's called vesicosis. And then the third one, after the food is ground up enough, then it goes to the third stomach, called the hemsis. In English, it's called the omasum. It's probably, the words are probably related. Where the appearance of it is, it makes it look like it grinds up the food. Physiologically, what it actually does is it extracts water and some fats and whatever from it. So now the Mishnah had said, if either of those has a hole, so we count them, we consider them as one for this purpose, because they have very similar functions in terms of digestion, and they're one right next to the other. So the Mishnah had said, if either one of them is punctured towards the outside, then the animal is trefa, as opposed to, we're going to learn later on, if they're punctured one into the other, as it is, there's a passage where the food goes from one into the other. So if in addition you also have an abnormal passage between them, fine, but at least it's not out into the body cavity, so fine. It means that some not fully digested food will make it into the hemsis, but that's not as big a deal. Okay. Now, so we're saying that the vesicosis then has this kind of double layer. It has a normal layer on the outside, and then on the inside it has this one with the indentations and all of that. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbana, we learn in a Braisa, Machat Shenimsis Ba'ovi Vesicosis. If we find the needle in the thickness of the wall of the vesicosis, and it's actually fairly common, because as an animal gobbles up a lot of food, sometimes there may be nails or needles or other such things in there. In fact, it's common enough that they call it hardware disease. So it can wind up stuck into the vesicosis. Mitzad Echad, if it's only through one side of this double wall, then the animal is still kosher, because as we've had with all the other organs until now, where we have a double layer, as long as one layer is intact, then it's kosher. But if it goes through both layers, then it will be trefa, because then it means, in other words, so now it's punctured all the way into the body cavity. As opposed to Tosfos refers to Rashi elsewhere in Chas, that explains that with the hemsis we wouldn't really have that, because the hemsis or the third stomach only has a very thin wall. So in other words, even if we find that it seems to have only punctured partway through, but because its wall is fairly thin, therefore we really have to be concerned that it went all the way through. Tosfos also discusses in this connection, when we say that it's kosher, if the needle is stuck in on the inside wall, as long as it doesn't go through the outer wall, we're kosher, then the animal is kosher. Tosfos points out the reverse is not true, though. If the needle goes through only the outer wall, then we have to declare the animal treif, because how did it get there in the first place? How did it get into the body cavity such that it should be stuck into the outside wall? It must have punctured one of the other internal organs, and then wound up over there. So Tosfos mentions that point, and Shulchan Aruch brings that lahalacha, that in fact, if you find the needle over there, it will be treif, and only when you find it inside the vesicosis, then as long as it didn't puncture through both layers, then you're fine. So the Gemara continues. Nimsa la koratz dam. Here's another din. If we find on the end of this needle a drop of blood, v'yadua shalifnei shechita, then you know that the needle punctured it before, while the animal was still alive, before the shechita, and then it means safe. Lo nimsa la koratz dam. But if the needle goes all the way through, if you don't find a drop of blood on it, then it means that it punctured through only la'afa shechita, only afterwards. And then it's not a problem. Then the animal is kosher. Another din in this connection, higlid piyamaka. If you find that there's an injury over there from the needle, but you actually find that it's scabbed over, So then miyadurash shloisha yamim kodim shchita. Then you know that this occurred at least 3 days before the shchita. Therefore, in other words, so the point of that would be either way, before shchita, but it will be negeya as far as dinim mominus. Namely, you bought an animal from somebody and shechted it and found this problem. Then if you find over there that already it's scabbed over, means that this had already happened more than 3 days before you shechted it, which means, therefore, it was a mekach tos, you bought it under false pretenses. You wouldn't have bought the animal if you knew that this was the situation, and therefore you're entitled to a refund. Obviously, what we mean is, in other words, when you bought it and shechted it shortly afterwards, we're not talking about when you bought it and kept it for a week or a month or whatever, and then you shechted it, then obviously there's nothing to talk about. Loi higlid piyamaka, and if it hadn't scabbed over yet, so you don't know, well, when did it happen exactly? It might have happened before you bought it or after. So then I'm moitzim mechaveil of araya, so then we're going to have to follow the usual rule. In dinim mominus, now the point is, I mean, normally it will scab over after 3 days, but Rashi points out elsewhere that conceivably you could have because of this particular animal's body chemistry, therefore it could happen that it didn't manage to scab. So if you see it scabbed over, definitely it takes no less than 3 days for that to happen. But if you don't find it, you don't really know whether it was before or after 3 days, so therefore ha-moitzi mechaveh al-varaya. So whoever wants to get money from the other is going to have to bring the proof. Who is the moitzi in this case? The one who bought the animal, because he's the one who paid the money for it. Normally that's how it's going to be. Normally you buy the animal, you pay money, and only then you shecht it. The Gemara actually in Ksubas mentions this point as well and has a bit of a different explanation over there. The Gemara points out that you can also have cases where the money is only meant to be paid after the shchita, and then you would have other cases as well. But in any case, the point is that usually the buyer will have to bring the proof. So Tosfos in fact over here refers to that Gemara in Ksubas where it discusses it in connection with certain other dinim of chazaka and hamotzi mechaveil of araya and so forth. Okay. So they want to ask the Maishanami called Mikovi de Alma. So why is this any different than any of the other cases of punctures that we've learned throughout this perek that make the animal terefa, the afagav de lekadam toref mar? And we say that even if you don't find any blood over there, then we're still declaring it treif. Why over here are we saying that we have to find blood over there in order for it to be a problem? And the answer is hasam lakam nidil misrach. Because in the other cases, you find a puncture over there, you don't find the needle over there. So therefore, there's nothing for the blood to stick to, and therefore, if there's a puncture over there, blood or not, the likelihood is that there was blood over there when it got punctured, and since then, it's gotten washed away. Because there's nothing for it to stick to. Opposed to over here, hocha kivin ikam machat, but here there is the needle over here, or the whatever, this piece of metal, if in fact the hole had happened before shchita, misra chavasarich, then we can expect the blood had stuck to it, and if there's no blood over there, then we have a strong reason to think, Tosfos points out, it would be not just a needle, the same thing would apply to a splinter, the same thing would apply to anything else, since there is what for it to stick to. Then we have reason to think that, so if we don't find blood over there, then we have a very strong reason to think that the puncture happened only after the shchita, and then, of course, it's not a problem anymore. Okay. The Gemara continues in this connection. Omer Rab Safra, Omer Rab Safra L'Abaya, Rab Safra says to Abaya, Chozimar, Rebbe, look what's going on. Hai, Tzuvah min Abonan da Osim imar Rabba, a certain young Tamad Chacham who came from the West, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, V'Omar, and he says, Rabba Vira Shmani, my name is Rabba Vira, V'Omar, so he identifies himself by name as Rabbi Avira. But Omar, he says, Maisa ubolifne Rebbe machat shenimtsis ba'uribes hakosis mitzad echad. It happened once that there was brought to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, a shayla involving this kind of thing, a needle that was stuck into one side of the thickness of the beis hakosis, the torfa, and he declared it treif. So what's going on over here? What is this guy saying that's treif when we were just learning all this time that it's kosher? So we got to find out what's going on over here. On what basis is Rabbi Avira saying this? So
So Abaya sent a messenger to bring Rabbi Avira to him. Loy also like Abay. So he didn't come to him for whatever reason. Rabbi Avira didn't come. Also who the Gabay. So instead Abaya went to see Rabbi Avira. So in other words, Abaya wasn't going to stand on stone. Only fine. If this Rabbi Avira doesn't want to come, then fine. I'll come to him to find out what's going on. So Abaya went to where Rabbi Avira was staying. Have a koya igra. At that point, Rabbi Avira was standing on the roof. So Abaya calls up to him. Nechus marvenesi, Rebbe, come on down here. So I can talk with you. And again, Rabbi Avira didn't want to come down. So again, Abaya didn't stand on ceremony, and he just went over there. Now you can see of this so why Rabbi Avira didn't want to come down is a question in itself. But in any case, Abaya really wants to find out what's going on over here, and if that means I have to set aside my covered and go see him and even climb up to the roof, then fine, that's what I'll do. Omale. And he says to him, Emily, gufo de ubda hechihava. So tell me the background of the story over here. You're reporting that a case was brought to Rebbe and that he declared it today, but what actually happened over there? Now, by the way, the Gemara does mention in a couple of places in Shas, the Gemara does mention, there Tosfos refers to it on the previous Omer, that there was a time in history when the names of these two stomachs were interchanged. The Gemara mentioned the Aramaic name for the Hemsis, for the third stomach, is Huvlila. The Aramaic name for the second stomach, Beis HaKosis, is Beitasi, which is the same meaning in Aramaic. There came a point, the Gemara says, when the names were switched around, and therefore, of course, this din involving the din over here involving through the two layers or through the one layer, then at that point it would be switched around. But apparently Abaya did not just attribute it the difference to that. He figures this Rabbi Avira is apparently a Talmud Chacham of note. If he's gonna be reporting that Rebbe said that in the Beis HaKosis it was Tsefa from one side, then we can't just mean, in other words, the names were switched around. There must be more here that's going on. So Rabbi Avira says, let me tell you first of all who I am. Mafka Knesiyas Anola Ilam Rebbe, Me Rebbe Rabba. I was a Mafka Knesiyas in front of the great Rebbe, in front of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Mafka Knesiyas, Rashi explains, means that he's the one who, he's like the, like the mashgi, like the one in charge of the scheduling in the Beis Medrash. He's the one who admits the Talmidim in when it's time for the Beis Medrash to open up, and he's the one who tells them when it's time to go. So basically, he's like the he's kind of like the mashgiach in the yeshiva, sort of. And it would come out, by the way, it would mean that Rabbi Avira had to have lived very long, because Rebbe passed away 100 years before Abaya's times. With that said, though, so Rashi is saying over here, Rebbe Rabba, the great Rebbe, means Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. On the other hand, Sefer Yuchsin, and Seder Adoris brings from Sefer Yuchsin, that no, Rebbe Rabba would be another great Talmud Chacham of a later generation, and in that case, this Rabbi Avira does not have to be quite as old as we're making him. In any case, so he says, I was a Mafka Knesiyas, I was like the one in charge of the scheduling, I was like the Mashgiach in the yeshiva. The Havar of Hunat Sipera, Rab Yosi, Mada, Yoshin Lefanov. At this point, when this story happened, Rab Huna from Sipori and Rab Yosi from Madai, which is now Sipori is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Madai is an area in present day Iran. So these two Talmidim were sitting in front of him. So they brought to Rebbe this kind of case where they found in the Beis HaKosis, they found a needle through only one thickness of it. So Rebbe turned the Beis HaKosis inside out to check more carefully. He found a drop of blood on it. The Tofa, and he declared it treif. So in other words, he found on the outside of the Beis HaKosis, corresponding to where the needle was on the inside, he found that there was a drop of blood. So obviously, therefore, Sichas Cholin actually explains, so what do you mean he turned it inside out? When they brought it to him, to begin with, they had the inner layer of the inner lining of the Beis HaKosis with all those indentations, that was on the outside, because that was where they found the needle to begin with. So Rebbe turned it back around to look at the outside, what's the outside when the animal is alive. And in fact, the Rishonim discussed this point. Do you really have to check?
They found the needle. You said they found the needle on the outside or on the inside?
No, they found it on the inside. So when the animal was alive, they found it in the inner layer of the Beis HaKodesh. Because again, the animal gobbles up a lot of food at one time, and sometimes there are needles or other kinds of pieces of metal stuck in there. So this piece then got embedded in the inner wall of the Beis HaKodesh when they had shechted this animal and they were cutting it apart. They found this when they checked the Beis HaKodesh. They turned it inside out and they found this needle over there. So now Rebbe has to turn it right side out again with the out what's the outside when the animal is alive to be on the outside. And there he found the needle over there. So there he found a drop of blood on the outside of it.
The drop of blood might have happened during the turning from the inside to the outside.
No, there's no reason that would cause a drop of blood, especially because that would be after Shchita. After Shchita, not all the blood comes out, of course. I mean, the fact is you need to do Melicha afterwards, but a substantial amount of the animal's blood comes out. That's why we said at the top of the Amud, if you don't find blood over there, then it means that it only punctured after Shchita, and therefore it's not a problem. After Shchita, there's no Trefus anymore. In fact, the poskim discuss the question: do you even need to check it, or is it even that you need to check it, or does it just so happen that that Rebbe checked it? In Shulchan Aruch it brings different possibilities on the subject. Boyd Kenoisa, we need to check it. If you don't find blood over there, then again it means it just passed through after Shchita. Shulchan Aruch goes on to say this is only if you didn't salt and wash the meat yet, because if it had passed through alive, then there would still be blood over there. But then he goes on to say if you don't have the needle over there, then again, we said before in the Gemara, since there's nothing for the blood to stick to, so the blood may well have been washed away. And then the Ramah goes on to say that if you didn't check it, then in fact it would be trefa. But then b'chlau yeshayim. In general, with a lot of these things that involve Bedikka, the Ramah writes a lot of times throughout Hilchos Trefus that we don't really have the expertise to be able to check. In any case, the Ramah also says, by the way, if you just find them inside the organ but not at all stuck into the wall of it, then you don't need to worry about anything at all. And he goes on to say, Yesh Mekilin, others are even more makel, that even if it punctured through, you don't have to check for a drop of blood. And in Hefzid Merubah, when there's a great loss, then it can be Soymech on that. So again, there's when Rebbe checked the outside over here, the side that's the outside when the animal is alive. Is it that he was required to, up yalocha, according to some poskim, or is it he's maybe not required to, but this is how he did it? In any case, the point is, he found the drop of blood, and if you find the drop of blood, then like we said at the top of the Amud, that demonstrates that it punctured while the animal was alive. If it was just after Shchita, there wouldn't be blood over there, there wouldn't be enough blood left in the animal's body for it to bleed like that, and in any case, it certainly wouldn't be caused just by the turning it inside out. The Omar, so Rebbe said, look, if there hadn't been an injury over there, why would there be a drop of blood over there? So therefore, is actually, I'm translating Kodet all this time as a drop of blood. It's not really the correct translation. Kodet really means like a bit of dried blood over there. So true, if the blood dried over there, it means that there obviously was an injury over there. So therefore, that's what Rabbi Avira says. This is why, on the basis of that, I'm saying that Rebbe found that the needle was only through one side, and he declared it treif. Omale, so Abaya answers to that. Abaya reacts to that. Torach tarye lahu gavra. Look, what a tircha you made that person, meaning myself. Torach, Rashi gives two gersois. Torach Tiriach, that you put in such a tircha, you're a dolem, such a major tircha, I had to schlep all the way out here and come up to the roof just to hear this. There's really no chiddush in it. Or the second explanation, Rashi says, according to the girsa that we have in that, Torach Tarye means like to bang his head. So like we said, but we had a few gafim ago, we had a case where a person was banging his head, and they said nizmaz mezmoichai, that his brain he's got a brain injury. So the same way, like Abaya is saying, you were matriach me and you drove me crazy to come all the way here, and there's not really any chiddush in what you told me, because masnisin he. After all, this is exactly what it says in the Mishnah. hemsis or beis hakosis shenich v'lachutz. When you have a hole in either the hemsis or beis hakosis towards the outside, then it's tzeifa. Obviously, if there was a drop of dried blood on the outside of the beis hakosis, then it shows the needle punctured all the way through. So what was Rabbi Avira thinking? So the Rashba explains that after all, look, if you, the chiddush would be precisely that if you find it on the inside, you do have to check the outside. Abaya is saying that, look, you know, obviously we have in the Mishnah that you have to check if it's into the outside, so obviously that itself implies that you need to check it. Again, there are Rishonim who disagree with that, and then according to them, there really isn't much of a chiddush in this case. It would just be a case that Rabbi Avira was telling over, and Abaya is saying there's really, after all said and done, you didn't really tell me much of a chiddush that we didn't already know. Next. The Mishnah had said another case where an animal is tzeifa, nofla min hagag. The Mishnah had said if an animal falls off a roof or off a high place, we learned at the beginning of the parak when we learned the list of the eight basic types of tzeifas, we had one called nefula, where an animal fell. So nofla min hagag, where it fell off a roof or any high place. We're concerned about what's called risuk evorim, that internal organs of it may have been crushed or damaged by the fall. So we're going to learn now as we go through over here, and then later on in the parak, what exactly we need to do to declare it kosher. So one possibility is we're talking about that vertebrae in the spine may have come loose, but then you have different Rishonim talk about different other potential things with internal organs that may have been damaged. So first of all, let's talk about some basic dinim in that connection. If you left an animal up on the roof, uvo matzalamata, and later on you come and find that the animal is on the ground. So the question is, did it fall off? We do not have to be concerned about this crushing of internal organs. We didn't see it fall. So like this now, we're going to learn later on in the parak that when you have a possible case of nefula, you have to let the animal live for 24 hours, and only then can you shecht it, because if there's any damage from the fall, then it will come out after 24 hours. So now, though, you don't need to do this because you didn't see it fall, because it may have just jumped on its own, and therefore that's not a problem. So in other words, the idea is if the animal falls, and like I didn't, as we're going to go on to say in the Gemara now, if the animal braces itself or if it expects the fall or whatever, then it's one thing. You're not going to have risuk evarim. It knows how to land in a way that it'll be safe. So here we don't have to be concerned that it may not have done that. We can assume that it jumped voluntarily and therefore there's no problem with it. So Rashi's shita is basically that you don't check something after 24 hours, but after 24 hours already, then there's not such a problem of potential risuk evarim, but then you still have to do just to check it for other potential problems as well. But I'm learning differently that it means just the fall itself may have not only dislocated vertebrae in the spine, it may have damaged other internal organs as well, but it takes 24 hours for those changes to come out. In other words, the nafkamina between Rashi and Rambam would basically be if you did shecht it within the 24 hours and checked it, according to the Rambam, it's no good because you checked them and found everything's intact doesn't mean anything. It takes 24 hours for those differences to come out, where according to Rashi, that might not be such an issue. In any case, so now we're saying that just because you found it below doesn't mean anything, because it may mean that it's jumped. That it jumped. And even if you find, even let's say, the Rishonim point out, even if you find that, let's say, it can't stand or it can't walk, fine. It may have misjudged the fall a little bit, but not so much that it would be deadly. Next. So the Gemara continues. Ravina one time owned a goat. One time it saw peeled barley down below a skylight in the house. So the animal had been up on the roof and it looked down through the skylight and it saw barley on the floor. So it wanted it. So dogar nofel me igralara. So it jumped. and went from the roof down onto the floor. But then, as Tosfos points out, after that, it wasn't able to walk. So now the question is there a problem of this Risuke Varim? So the question is, so now the case was brought to Rabashi. Can we declare this animal kosher, or is it a problem that it might be treif? So he said to him, when we said before, we just said that Rav Huna had said that if you left it on the roof and later on you found it down on the ground, you don't have to worry about Risuke Varim, that might be, so that would be. The question is, we have to figure out on what basis did Rav Huna say that. Mishum de isla midi la misrach. Is it because normally it has something to hold itself onto? In other words, when it's coming off the roof onto the ground, so usually you'll have, like, it's not going to do one big jump all the way down to the ground. It'll hold on, it'll brace itself against the wall, and therefore it'll break its fall a little bit, and it won't be such a sudden jump. Well, then, in that case, here, there's nothing between the skylight and the floor. So once it lets go, then it's going to fall, and maybe there is a concern. Maybe of Rusuke Varim. Because after all, the skylight is in the middle. It's not near the walls where you could say that it climbed down the walls, sort of. Or maybe we could say, because if the animal is going to jump, it's first going to evaluate. It's going to instinctively evaluate, is this going to be a safe jump or not? In that case over here, it's also going to do this instinctive evaluation. It's not going to jump if it feels that it's too high up. So that's the question. What do we do in this case? We have Rav Huna's din, but can we apply Rav Huna's din in this case? So that was Ravina's question. So when Ravina brought the Shaila to Abaya, and he explained the basis of my Shaila is that we have to understand what Rav Huna answered, what Rav had said. The real reason is the second possibility you said, because it evaluates itself, it evaluates the fall, because nothing to do with whether it's going to be able to hold on or anything. The animal will instinctively recognize whether this is a safe jump or not. So here also we can assume that it evaluated it to be a safe jump, and therefore there's no problem of risuke varim. And that in fact is the halacha. So this whole issue of nefula is only if it was only something that the animal didn't expect. Next, ahi imarta to have a beir of chaviva. It happened once that there was a female sheep in the household of Rav Chaviva to have a shadron kari basraisa. It was dragging its hind legs behind it. It couldn't walk normally on its hind legs. Rabbi Yemar says, "Hai shigroina nakte." Evidently, this animal is suffering from shigroina, from a cramp, or a spasm, or something like that. So, in other words, it's not a matter of treifus; it's a matter of that. It's just a matter of the animal has sciatica or something like that. Maski for Ravina, but Ravina questioned that. How do you know? Maybe the reason it's dragging its legs is because its spinal cord was cut. And then, as we learned before that there's a point in the spinal cord. Up until we said there are the various parashas, we said there are the various places where the spinal cord branches off as it gets closer to tail. And then from that point on, if there are two, we learned in detail before, I wasn't just briefly, we learned in detail about the three parishes, the three major branchings over there, and then once you reach a certain one of them, then the animal is kosher, and another one is a suffix, etc. But here, if the animal is dragging its legs, then the spinal cord may have been damaged above that point, and therefore it would be safe.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's the question. How can we assume?
No. The animal can drag its feet, but it doesn't mean the spinal cord necessarily is the cause.
That's fine. But Rabbi Yemar had said we don't have to worry about spinal cord problems. It just means the animal is suffering from cramps. Ravina said maybe the chota shedra is. In other words, the point is Ravina is not saying for sure it's treif, but Ravina is saying like this. We talked about before that in principle you do not have to check for all the treifus. We learned before you have to check for treifus of the lungs because they're very common. The rule is most treifus are quite rare. And you have the animal has a chazaka of not having any of them. So even though we're going to have, even though we're going throughout the parak with dozens of different treifas, 70 altogether, the way that Amam enumerates them, the vast majority you don't have to check for because you don't have what's the reisa. You don't have a reason to think that there's any problem. So when you have with a particular animal that you have a reisa, then you have to check. The animal was, for example, to give an example, we're going to go on and discuss it here in the Gemara. If the animal was hit along the spine in certain ways, then you have to check if the spinal cord was damaged. Animal, if an animal, for example, if let's say, for example, you know, the animal was punctured by something, then you have to start checking internal organs, that sort of thing. Ordinarily, you only need, you need to check for what?
Now, do you include in the spinal cord all the nerves that come out of the spinal cord or not?
So, no, we're talking primarily the spinal cord itself, the nerves that come out of it. Obviously, some of them are going to be vital to the animal, like the nerves that supply the lungs or the heart or whatever, obviously. But, look, I mean, the animal's not going to live very long if those are cut anyway. We're talking about...
No, I'm talking about the nerves that come from the spinal cord that, go to the legs or to, you know, to the back muscles.
That's what we described before. A few blocks ago, we had the three parshos. What we talked about was, like this, the spinal cord runs down the length of the animal. What happens is, though, as nerves branch off of it, as they do throughout the body, the spinal cord itself remains the same thickness throughout, and you just have nerves branch off of it. Eventually, they'll get to the point. We learned previously, there comes a point further down in the body, in medicalese, it's called the cauda equina. In Gemara, we call it the parashos, where it actually starts narrowing, where it itself branches and becomes narrower. And what we learned was, we said there were three such branchings where if it's cut at the first one, the animal is still treif, and at the third one, it's kosher, and the second one, we were saying, was a suffix. And we had this at the bottom of Memhei Memveis, and the top of Memvava Medalef. So now Ravina is saying, fine, we're not going to say outright that the animal is treif, but the same way as if an animal was hit on the spine, and now you have to check the spine, and the same way if you have reason to be concerned, the animal has some, you have some way of knowing, for example, if the animal has a heart condition, and therefore you have to check its heart, etc., and you always have to check the lungs, because there's a miyutam motzri, it's very often that there are problems with the lungs and certain things like that. So Ravina is saying, when we check this animal, we should have to check the spinal cord and see whether it was cut. So the Gemara says, but cool, sure enough, they did check it. And they found, like what Ravina says, that in fact, in this particular specimen's example, the chut ha-shedra had been cut. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, nevertheless, the halacha is like Rabbi Yemer, the fact that an animal is dragging its hind legs is not a reason to consider a reyesa, that you should necessarily have to check the spinal cord, because shigroina shchiyah chut ha-shedra le-shchiyah, that there should be cramps or sciatica or whatever is a common enough kind of thing, whereas injuries and damage to the spinal cord are much less common, and therefore you can assume that the reason why the animal is dragging its legs is because of cramps or something, and not something that has any implication with the halachas of Tereves. So again, if you check it and you find, then fine, you can then you have a problem, but you're not required to check for it. In the same way as most Tereves, if you happen to check, let's say, for example, if you happen to check an animal's head, let's say, and you find a hole in the meninges, in the membranes around the brain, then the animal is going to be treifa, of course, but you're not required to check for that unless there's a reisa, unless you have a reason to think this particular animal is suffering from that. And the same thing is true of most treifas, so it is here as well. Again, what you have to do is you have to check for miyutam motzui. So you have to check for lungs in an animal because there's a miyutam motzri. There's a significant minority of animals that have trouble with the lungs. And then different things, different places, you're going to have different things. There were some of the posts you talk about, for example, there were certain places and certain times where it was very common for animals to have water on the brain, some kind of thing where cerebrospinal fluid forms a tumor or a sac or something like that. So you have to check for such things because in those times and places, it was a miyutam motzri. In most places, you don't have to check for that. Nowadays, for example, they have to check the intestines of birds and the legs of birds because it's common for there to be certain trachis that can happen over there. But there are other things they don't usually have to check for, and so it is over here, we're saying. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Huna, more dinim on this topic of animals that fell. Zchorim ha-menagchim zeh zeh. When you have rams that are
that are goring one another, that are fighting one another with their horns. So now, if one of them gets knocked down onto the ground by the other one, you don't have to worry about risuke evarim. What do you mean? It fell very hard. And that would be true, even though when the animal stands up afterwards, it looks like it's hurting. So you should be concerned maybe that it was injured. Doesn't matter. It means that they're suffering overheating from the fight. Doesn't mean that their internal organs were actually damaged. However, not if they fell onto the ground. If they were fighting, neither one knocked down the other one, but they were just fighting with their horns. And now afterwards, one of them is standing over there and panting and seems in obvious distress. Nevertheless, we can assume it just got overheated from the fight. But if it actually fell on the ground, if its opponent actually knocked it down, vade chashin, and then indeed we do have to be concerned of risuke evarim. Because again, it didn't expect to get knocked down, and therefore it couldn't, and therefore it didn't brace itself, and therefore, in other words, you have the usual rule where you have to wait 24 hours. Now Tosfos points out, we're going to learn later on in the sugya that you need it to fall from a minimum of 10 tefachim. Here, it's not 10 tefachim necessarily, but because it's a forceful thing, it was knocked down by its opponent, then therefore we're concerned about risuke evarim even with less than 10 tefachim. With that said, there are Rishonim who learn that it doesn't mean that you have to worry about the official thing of risuke evarim and wait 24 hours. It just means you need to check whether there are any noticeable trachis. But according to that opinion, in other words, you wouldn't need to wait the usual 24 hours that you do for an afula. You just, after you shecht it, you can shecht it within 24 hours, but you do have to check whether anything was damaged. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar of Menashe. In this kind of another din, Rav Menashe says, "Hani dichri de ganvi ganvi, de ganvi ganovi. If thieves steal rams, in choshen mishum risuk evarim. So now, what happens is they steal them and like they throw them over a fence. So they grab them from someplace from a fenced in area where the owner keeps them." And then they throw them over the wall, so then they can run out and grab them and then run away from them. So now in choshin mishum risuk evarim, we're also not concerned about risuk evarim. My timer, why not? It's more than 10 tefachim. He shod lahu. The reason is because when the thieves throw them over the wall, I'm a snayu shod lahu. They're careful. They throw them in a way that they will land on their hips. In other words, that they're going to land on their hips and on their feet, which will be able to absorb the, in other words, they're careful that if they throw them in a way that they land on their back, then yeah, it could easily break their spine or something, and then you have risuk evarim. But the thieves, to begin with, are careful. They want to be able to take the animal with them. They want the animal to be able to run after all. So they throw them. They're careful to throw them in a way that they'll land right side up, and that their hips will be able to absorb the blow of the fall. Because they want the animal to be able to run ahead of them. They don't want to have to pick up the animal and schlep it. Now, ahadrinu, what happens if they return the animals? So, and they do the same thing. They throw them back over the wall into the enclosed area where they started out from. So vade chashinan. So then indeed we do have to be choshish, because if they're throwing it, they're throwing it back. Now, it might be because they're afraid of being caught. They realize the police are after them, and if they don't return it, then if they're caught with the stolen goods, then they're who knows what's going to happen to them. So therefore, they're just going to figure, let me get rid of it. Let me not worry about what happens to it. Fine. You know, the owner is going to suffer a loss. Not our problem. At least we don't have the goods on us anymore. So therefore, we do have to be concerned. However, the Gemara says, "V'hani mili dahadrinu machmas yira." However, that would only apply if they return them, yeah, because of fear of the police or whatever. Avo machmas tshuva, but if they're returning it because they changed their mind, decided to do tshuva mal yisuhu davdi, then they're going to want to do a proper tshuva, and they're going to want to return the animal so it ends up back intact the way that it came. And therefore, they're going to be careful again to throw it in a way not that it lands on its back, but rather that it lands right side up and be able to be healthy after all.
the Sichas Cholin and this connection brings it. So Rashi is explaining when we're talking about that they throw it in such a way, we said that it lands on its hips, meaning in other words, where it can absorb the impact. The Aruch understands differently that what they do is they lower it down to the level of their hips and they lower it gradually. So therefore the idea would be, again, if they're returning it out of fear, they're not going to bother with that. They just want to toss it back over and get out of there as fast as possible, as opposed to if they're doing, it out of tshuva, then it means that they're going to, again, as the Aruch is saying, lower it slowly so it gets there safely, and therefore we don't have to be concerned about risk avoiding. More on this topic, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Hika al Roisha. If a person hit an animal, from the head end, the Hochala Klapes Nava, and the blow goes all the way across, along the length back, down to the tail, or the other way around, Al Znava, the Hochala Klapes Roisha, or the other way around, he starts at the tail end, and goes towards the head. So the Maharshal has a Girsa in Rashi that what it means is that the stick bent. In other words, the Maharshal's Girsa in Rashi is that stick bent and only touched the animal in two places, one at the head and one at the tail, and didn't touch the places in between. And then there's a different Girsa in Rashi which Maharshal prefers. Which is, never mind the stick bending, we just mean that the force of the stick went along the entire back of the animal without the blow was equally well absorbed by the entire back. So then, Rabbi Yehuda is telling us, we're not concerned about risuk evarim. In other words, the end of the stick is where the main force of the blow is going to be. So here you have that, So if you learn the Girsa and Rashi that it was hit, that the stick bent and hit the animal only in those places, fine. The head and the tail are not places where you have a problem of risuk evarim. Okay, the head you may have, we're going to have later on in the perek, you're going to have if the skull itself is broken, then you have problems, but depending how big the breaks are, but just a blow on the head in and of itself doesn't cause risuk evarim, and the same thing, a blow on the tail doesn't either. If you learn, rather, the point is that the stick goes along the full length of the animal, fine, there's no particular place where the blow is concentrated more than any other, and therefore there's no problem of risuk evarim. So connected kolashedra kula. So as long as it's along the whole length of the spine, ain choshin mishum risuk evarim, then we don't have to be worried about this risuk evarim. But the isholim chutra paugi degaba. But what if the stick is short and it goes only halfway along the back, and again the force of it is going to be concentrated at the end of it? And then we have to be concerned, maybe at the point of the end of the stick, then the spinal cord may have been broken. So now when you shech the animal, you're going to have to check for that kind of thing, the spinal cord being broken or vertebrae being dislocated or whatever. Similarly, the ispa kitri, if there are knots or knobs on the stick, the same thing. There's going to be a stronger blow in the places where those land on the animal's back. The imachia paske, and also, if you hit crosswise across the back rather than the length of it, chayshin, and then also you have to be concerned that that particular place where you hit has suffered risuk evarim. So in all those cases, you would have to check it, but in the case where it went the full length of the animal, or according to the Maharshal's Girsa, where it didn't touch the spine at all, just the head and the tail, then there wouldn't be a problem. So in other words, the basic idea being, in other words, that a blow of a stick can conceivably cause risuk evarim if it's strong enough. Maharshal deals a little more in detail with the Girsa that we have over here that we're not talking about. So we can have, let's say, for example, you hit it on the head, and it went straight down all the way to the end. So then you can talk about whether the stick bent or whether it bent or whether it did bend and hit only some of the ribs. Then again, you have a concern about a stronger blow over there. Next, another din. The Gemara says, Omer of Nachman, Beis Harechem Ein Bei Mishum Risuk Evarim. The womb, there's no problem of Risuk Evarim. So Rashi explains, if you have a newborn animal that just came out of the womb, and the womb is, after all, a very narrow place, you don't have to be concerned of Risuk Evarim that may have taken place in there while it was pressed together in the womb. So you don't have to wait 24 hours in order to check the newborn baby. You can check it right away. And the point is, Tosafot says, look, I mean, a newborn animal doesn't necessarily walk right away. If it walks right away, of course, it was obviously born healthy, and there's no problem. But here we're saying, even if it didn't walk, nevertheless, we don't have to be concerned about, we don't have to be concerned that there may have been, that there may have been Rizuk Evarim. Although there are Mephoshim who understand that what the Gemara is saying is not so much that you have to check every, you don't have to check everything in it, but you would at least have to check the spine to see whether that might have been damaged in the birth. No, actually, that was it. That was about, rather about the previous din. Anyway, so the point is that, in other words, there's no Rizuk Evarim, but we're talking about even the animal won't, the newborn animal won't stand for, or the Ramban says, let's say it was a hard birth. You might be concerned there was Rizuk Evarim, and therefore we're saying that there's no problem with that. The Ran, in fact, explains, again, you have this Miut HaMotzi business that we said before. We said that where you have something that's with a significant minority of animals that suffer from a certain condition, you have to check for it. So the thing is, you have a Miut HaMotzi, you might think there's a Miut HaMotzi of animals where the birth does not go so well, and the animal ends up not, the newborn animal comes up not so good afterwards. So we're saying that you should always, we're saying that nevertheless, you don't need to worry about that. A whole different understanding of Beis HaRechem in the Shurim. So all of this was saying Beis HaRechem would mean an animal that was in the womb. We're not concerned about Rizuk Evarim. The Rambam has a whole different explanation of it that says that when you're checking the internal organs of the animal to see after an afula, after an animal has fallen off a height or something like that, where we said you have to check for potentially crushed organs, The Rambam understands it to mean that you do not need to check the womb, even if the womb got damaged by the fall. Nevertheless, the womb not being a vital organ is not a problem, and the animal won't be treifa because of that. In any case, Amalei Rava, the Rav Nachman. So Rava says to Rav Nachman, Tanya de Messiah Loch, I have a braisa that supports what you're saying, that there's no problem of Rizuk Evarim in connection with the womb. A braisa says, Tinek ben Yom Echad mitame b'ziva. And even one, a newborn baby, born a human baby here we're talking about, is capable of becoming tamei with ziva. So ziva is, you have, there's an emission from the male organ, there's a regular emission of zera, and then you can have, there's an abnormal emission where the color and the consistency of it are different than normal, and that kind of thing is called ziva. And we know the Torah tells us that then it makes a person tamei with a very severe degree of tumah. So now a newborn baby is not capable of producing regular zera yet, but if there comes out zoy from him, then nevertheless he would be considered tamei, even though he's long before the age where he would be producing regular emissions from that part of his body. Now, so how does that prove anything? Rava says, Isak Dadach Yeshbe Meshum Rizuk Evarim. If you're going to say when a baby is born, there's a potential of Rizuk Evarim, Ikrikan, then wouldn't you apply over here in the womb, you'd sorry Velei Machnas Oinzoi. The Pasuk says, when it introduces the concept of a Zov, it says that he has his Zov Mibisorei from his flesh. That means, in other words, where it happens on its own, what they call in medicalese, idiopathically, without an obvious cause, v'loy machnas oinsoi, not because of an oinus. And one example of that is if a person is sick and then becomes a zov, then he doesn't become tamei from ziva, because then we attribute the ziva to his sickness. Now, the point is, if a baby that's born, if there's a problem of Rizuk Evarim, that's a form of sickness, then it would be impossible for a newborn baby to become tamei with ziva, the same way as an adult, if he's sick, wouldn't be matame with ziva. So that demonstrates, Rava says, what Rav Nachman is saying, that in fact, a newborn baby is not, there's no potential problem of Rizuk Evarim, and therefore he is able to become tamei with ziva. Now, Tosfos points out a problem with that. We're saying that when it comes to an animal, we're not concerned, even though the animal is not able to walk right away, because we're not concerned about Rizuk Evarim. How are we proving that from a human baby? Of course a human baby can't walk right away. No human baby is able to walk on the day he's born. So how is that a proof? So Tosfos says, fine, that it means, in other words, that if there was a problem of Rizuk Evarim, then even by any birth, we should at least find. We may not say there's Rizuk Evarim, but at least we should consider it an oinus. And again, an oinus would make that it wouldn't be ziva. For that matter, Tosfos says, look, it's highly uncommon for a newborn baby to have ziva in the first place. You could argue the very fact itself that he has ziva maybe demonstrates that there's something wrong over here. Maybe we should be considered about risuke evarim, and nevertheless, it shows that we're not concerned. Okay. So then in that case, so that I would prove Reb Nachman's point. But the Gemara says not necessarily, because Chacham Ma'askin can show you off the Derech Doifen. Because Mishnah, that Braisa that we just caught, that we just talked about, maybe talking about where the baby was born by C-section. So therefore, so now there's obviously no Risuke Evarim, because obviously it didn't come out through the normal birth process, and therefore you could say that now, in fact, you would say there's no sickness, there's no potential Risuke Evarim, and therefore... And therefore you can say that therefore you can say he's metame bezoiv. Maybe in fact, if he was born in the regular way vaginally, then maybe in fact you would say that there could potentially be risuke evarim to the extent that at least we would say he doesn't become tame from ziva. Rashi, by the way, points out we have to be talking about that both the mother and the baby survive the birth. Because otherwise, Rashi points out, if the mother died first, then the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the baby is going to die before the mother does, and then there's nothing to talk about ziva. And also the Chassam Sofer adds, it can't even be, for example, that we did an emergency C-section when the mother was alive, because then you're going to kill the mother in that. So it has to be, therefore, that we're talking about that the mother and baby actually survived it. Marsha deals with the point. I mean, the Gemara does explain elsewhere that the Gemara does mention in the previous parak, for example, that you could have, let's say, we talked about over there, the Gemara Tosfos had talked about over there, that let's say you could have if the mother was killed unnaturally, or in the case of an animal was shechted, and then the baby can survive. But the Gemara is going to point out soon a din that necessarily involves the mother being alive. So therefore here also Rashi explains that we're talking about where the mother actually survived the birth. Usually in medical literature, they usually claim that until modern times, they were never able to do C-sections in a way that the mother would survive, but we see from the Gemara that they were actually sometimes able to. Supposedly they say that Julius Caesar was born by C-section, for example. Tosfos actually mentions it elsewhere. And in fact, his mother was still alive when he was an adult even, so that would be another, that might potentially be another example. Okay. The Gemara says, fine, here's another proof. Toshma, Lunan Abraisa, Ego Shnola B'Yomtev, if a calf was born on Yomtev, then you're allowed to shecht it, Shoftinosa B'Yomtev, you're allowed to shecht it on Yomtev. The point being, in other words, it actually says you don't consider that it's Mukta, because it was Nolad, because it was born on that day, because even before Yomtev, you would have been able to, if you shechted the mother, and you're perfectly allowed to shecht the mother on Yomtev, then the baby automatically would have been Mutter with it. Now, the point is, if there was a potential problem of Risuke Evarim, then you can't shecht it that day, because you'd have to wait 24 hours. And the answer is Hachanamik Genshi Yotze Derech Doifan. We can answer that here also the Mishnah is talking about where this baby was extracted by C-section, and therefore you could say that then there's certainly no Risuk Evarim. But you don't know, there's not necessarily a solid proof from there that it was born in a natural way, that you shouldn't be concerned about Risuk Evarim. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma, fine, let's bring another proof. There's a machloikus in Masech, also in Masech the Beitza, also in connection with the Jim of Yom Tov. Now, what happens? You have a Bechor animal, as we're going to learn in Masech the Bechoris in a few months, Bez Hashem. A Bechor animal has Kedusha. It was actually in today's Parasha as well. Ach, Bechor Shor, Bechor Kesev, whatever. So it has Kedusha. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, you bring it as a korban. But if it develops a mum, then the Kohen can shecht it and eat it any way he wants. Now, suppose you have a bechor that before Yom Tov it didn't have a mum, and then on Yom Tov it developed a mum. So now the question is whether you would be allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov, and it wasn't ready to be brought before Yom Tov. On the face of it, you could argue that it's mukta because you didn't know before Yom Tov that it's going to develop a mum. So it's machlokas in Masechta Beitza. So now the Braisa continues. The Shovin, the two opinions over there on this subject, the two opinions about whether a Bechor, that, about whether, so you say you have in the Mishnah, in, in, uh, in, in Masechta Beitza over there. So yeah, well, so the actual case is over there. You have a bechur that fell into a pit on Yom Tov. So now it may have developed a mum right there. It may have broken its leg or something. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi over there in the Gemara says that you send somebody down into the pit and see whether it has a mum. And if yeah, then you can shecht it. If not, then not. Then Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh says that no, you can't do that because you're not allowed to look at the mum on Yom Tov and declare it to be a Baal mum either. So he mentions Yom Machlokas Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda on that subject, whether you're allowed to check for a mum on Yom Tov. So now the Braisa continues, Veshavin, both Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon agree, Shem Nolad, who, Mumma Ima, if the animal was born already having a mum, Shizeshazem and Amuchan, that is already considered Muchan, it's already considered, it was prepared before Yom Tov. So because it doesn't become Kaddish, it doesn't have the Kedusha of a Bechor until it's actually born. So when it's in the womb, it doesn't yet have the Kedusha of a Bechor. And in fact, we're going to learn in the Masechta Bechoros, there are various things that you can do while it's in the womb to prevent it from ever getting the Kedusha of a Bechor. We'll learn about that in a few months, that's a shame. So now the point is that once it's born, and it gets the Kedusha of a Bechor as it's born, but also at that point it has a mum. And therefore there's no problem shechting it. So both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would be fine with that. So now, again, if you were going to say there was Rusuk Evarim, you still wouldn't be able to shecht it that day anyhow, because you have to wait and see 24 hours and see if it has Rusuk Evarim. So that would be a strong proof that there's no Rusuk Evarim in our case over here, like Rabbi Nachman had said. So the question is, so you're going to answer, okay, maybe they were also talking about it was born by C-section. Can't. If it was born by C-section, then it wouldn't have the Kedusha of a Bechor in the first place. You don't need to worry about whether it has a mum. Reb Shimon, now you have a machloikas in the Masechta Nida, which we'll learn next year, Bez Hashem, where a baby that was born by C-section, so the Tanakama holds that it's not considered a birth, lahalocha, and therefore, in particular, the mother does not have the tumah of birth. As it says in Parashas Tazria, a woman is tumah for a certain amount of time after she gives birth. The Chachamim over there hold that does not apply to a C-section, only to a normal vaginal birth. Reb Shimon holds it does apply to a C-section as well. Nevertheless, Reb Yechanan says, Reb Shimon agrees, in Kodshim, when it comes to Kodshim, she'enei Kodesh, that a baby born by C-section does not have the Kedusha of a Bechor. Well, for that matter, no, you can't have the Kedusha of a Korban in general, actually, not just Bechor, but in general, you can't bring a baby born by C-section as a Korban. So here, actually, Tosfos points out, we don't even really care about other Kodshim, just the fact that it's a Bechor, and a Bechor has to be born naturally, but we're mentioning over here all, in fact, Reb Shimon would hold that no Kodshim would have Kedusha in that case. So therefore, so you can't be talking about where the animal was born by C-section. You have to talk about where it was born normally. And yet we're saying that if it was a Bechor and born with a mum, you're allowed to shecht it even on Yom Tov. That demonstrates, therefore, that you're not worried about Rusuk Evarim. Otherwise, you should have to check. Otherwise, you should have to wait 24 hours. And by the time 24 hours pass, it's not Yom Tov anymore. Obviously, we're talking in Eretz Yisrael, where they only have one day Yom Tov. So the answer is no, because Hocha Maeskin, Shehifris Agabe Kavka. Not necessarily, because the Braisa is talking about over here where you can shecht it on that day, where it actually stood on the ground, and actually Hifris means more than just stood. It means Rashi explains, like it stuck its hooves into the ground and braced itself and stood up. We're there. All this time when we've been talking about with an animal that's Nefula, where it fell down, we said we have to wait 24 hours. That's provided that it didn't stand up. We're going to learn later on, and then we're going to learn later on actually exactly how much the animal needs to stand up and move. But the point is, there comes a point where it does that, where it's able to stand, and it's able to move, where we see, therefore, there's no problem of Rusuk Evarim. So therefore, so in other words, we're saying over here that if the newborn animal, in fact, did that, then yeah, we can shecht it on Yom Tov, because there was obviously no Rusuk Evarim. That doesn't show that in the case we were talking about until now, where, as Tosfos said, we're talking about the animal does not stand, so Reb Nachman had said there's no problem of Rusuk Evarim, but now the Gemara is saying that even though Rava had tried to bring proofs for it, and the Gemara had tried to bring proofs, not necessarily are they such solid proofs, and we could say that if the animal did not stand up or walk independently, then in fact maybe there is a concern of Rusuk Evarim. Okay, so we haven't proved what Reb Nachman says, but we haven't contradicted it either. Okay. More on these dinim of Nefula, the Gemara continues. Ahu Torah de Nofal, it once happened that an ox fell down the Ishnema Kal Negichuse, and it was such a hard fall that you could hear
and you could hear the sound of Nigi Chose. So Rashi translates the word Nigi Chose, actually, it says on the side over here, it's supposed to be Gimi Chose, which means it's groaning.
Like, in other words, it was such a hard fall that the, I skipped the line over here, sorry.
So we don't have a proof against Rav Nachman, we don't have a proof for him either. Okay, V'omer Rav Nachman says another din, Beis Hamet B'chaim Ein B'mishum Restrukei Evarim. When it comes to a shlachtor, you're throwing down the animal in order to shecht it, so there's also no problem of Restrukei Evarim. Because again, you throw it down carefully,
the Gemara is going to explain soon why there's not a problem. So in this connection, the Gemara said, Ahu Torah did not follow what happened. Once an ox was fell down in the shlachtor, the Ishtema Kol Negichusei, and you could hear its noise, you could hear its sound when it fell down. So you can hear like it's groaning, like it's in pain, and therefore isn't there a potential problem of risuk evarim? The Rambam has a different understanding. The Rambam has a girsa nigi chuse, that it means that it was a hard fall, and you can hear a loud bang from its fall.
In any case, old Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel by Marta came in after the animal had been shechted, shokel mishufri shufri, and he went and bought one of the best cuts of meat from this animal. In other words, obviously he was saying that there's not a problem of treifus. So Rabbanan asked him, where do you get this from? How do you know it's kosher? You're not worried about risuk evarim. So he answers them, Hochi Omer Rav, because Rav said Tzipon of Noyetz Ad Shemagiyah La'aretz. Because when the animal feels that it's being knocked down, it digs its hooves into the ground, and so it doesn't fall so hard. It braces itself instinctively as it's falling, so it doesn't fall quite so hard. So even though, as Rashi is saying, it made a huge noise, it moved very loudly, like that afterwards, but the fact is it braced itself enough that it broke its fall a little bit, and therefore, so it's not considered a height, it's not considered a fall from a height such that it should be a problem. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, okay, but we learned on Amud Aleph, we have the case where the two animals are fighting with one another, and we are concerned about risuk evarim if one of them knocks the other one down. The reason is because over there, neither one thinks in its animal brain that it's going to fall down. It's trying to knock down the other one. So when it gets knocked down, it's like a surprise for it. So it doesn't have time to brace itself. But in the shlachtos, the fact is, when you're knocking down the animal, you have to first start by pushing it. It's a big animal, after all. So it takes time. So it takes time for it to actually be thrown down, and therefore it has time to brace itself. In fact, it is true, and Shulchan Aruch says, if, let's say, for example, it was a smaller animal, and you did knock it down, you did throw it down very quickly, and it didn't have time to brace itself, then yes, you would have to be concerned. Here, in this case, you heard a loud noise from it, you heard a loud bang, according to the Rambam, or you hear the animal groaning very loudly, according to Rashi. Nevertheless, we have every right to assume that the animal felt itself being pushed, and therefore it had time to brace itself, and therefore there's no problem of risuk evarim, and therefore the Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta is saying, I'm able to buy meat from it right away. We don't care that it never got up again. We don't care that it was shechted right afterwards. It's fine. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omda Yehuda Omer Rav, Omda Einet Tzricha Me'es Les. If the animal stands up after the fall, then you don't need to wait the 24 hours, B'dika Vade Boya, but you would indeed need to check it. You would need to check the spine and the ribs and whatever and make sure that nothing's been broken or dislocated. So in other words, again, the point is, so we don't have to start checking all the internal organs, but at least we need to check for that. Holcha, but if the animal actually walks independently, ainet tzricha b'dika, then you don't even need to check for that, says Rav Yehuda in the name of Rab. Rav Chiya Ba'ashi Yoma, achas du v'achas du, tzricha b'dika, but Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says either way, it's going to require b'dika. So the halacha is like Rav Yehuda Amar Rab, but there are different understandings among. First of all, it has to be that the animal stood up by itself, but not if people stood it up. That wouldn't help. With that said, the Rashba brings, and ultimately it's brought la'alocha, that if after you shecht it, you do in fact find that one of the internal organs was damaged or whatever,
So, actually, the other way around. If it walked, then even if there is damage to one of the internal organs, then it obviously wasn't risuke varnum. It would have been something that the animal, maybe there was a temporary problem with one of those things, then obviously, if it has any of the actual trephus, but in other words, we're talking about sometimes you have like a damage to an organ that doesn't rise to a level of trepha. If it's risuke varnum, then you have a problem, but if the animal actually walked, then the Rashba says that obviously it means it's fine. In other words, if it weren't for that, if it was strong enough that it would be make it trefa, it wouldn't have been able to walk. So therefore, so not like Rabbi Ba'ashi says that either way you need bedikah, the halacha would be that if it actually walked, then you don't need to check it. And then again, the post can talk about exactly nowadays that Ramah says we often don't have the expertise to be able to do that kind of bedikah, to be able to check these kinds of things. So, the Gemara continues. It doesn't even have to be necessarily if the animal actually stood up. If it stuck out its leg, appearing to stand up, even if it didn't actually stand up, then it's fine and you don't need to start checking for risuke evonim. The idea being, the animal is going to instinctively feel whether it can stand up or not. So, we're not talking about where it tried to stand up and it couldn't. We're talking about where it tried to stand up and it just haven't noticed what happened after that. Okra raglo lahalech, and similarly, if the animal picked up its hind leg, getting ready to walk, afvishlei holcha, even though it didn't walk, then it's considered as though it walked. Says Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'acha. Rav Chista goes even further. Near olamid, even if it only is like shaking itself, and then getting ready to stand up, afvishlei omdo, even though it didn't stand up, then it would be. So the Gemara finishes off the Hilchsa. This part is in parenthesis, and these next few lines are in parenthesis. And actually, many Rishonim do not have them in the Gusa of the Gemara. But the Hilchsa, the bottom line halacha would be according to this parenthetical note. So hefa the nuflam and agag, but lo yada. If the animal fell off the roof unknowingly, and we learned on Amud Aleph, if it jumps down, is different. But if it fell off unknowingly, the umda, and then you have this potential problem in the fula, the umda, and then it stood, v'loy holcha, but it didn't walk yet, sricha b'dika, then you would need to check it for potential trephus, that there's problems with the spine or the ribs or whatever. The ainat sricha mess less, but you wouldn't have to wait the 24 hours. The im holcha, but on the other hand, if it walked after the b'dika nami loy sricha, then it doesn't even require b'dika. So basically the same thing as Rabbi Huda had said in the name of Rav. So now, what is that adding if we just said Rabbi Huda saying that in the name of Rav? So Tosfos, who does have that Girsa, they say what the Gemara wants to stress with that is not like the opinions of the Amiroyim that we just said it's good enough if it sticks out its foreleg or its hind leg and gets ready to, or it shakes itself. The Gemara would be stressing that no, it actually needs to actually stand or actually walk. So that would be the bottom line of this. So again, so far, to summarize, the Rashba summarizes as follows. If it jumped off on its own, then you don't need anything at all. It evaluated for itself whether the jump would be safe, and therefore we're fine. If it fell without its knowledge, then you have this risuke varnim, and then you have, it depends whether, provided you have some of the cases that we said before, like the one with the ganovim or whatever, but other than that, so you have, you would have, if it didn't stand up and didn't wait 24 hours, then it would be trefa. If it stood up or it waited 24 hours, then you need bedikah, and if it actually walked normally, then you don't need anything at all. And again, you have the various dinim. If it was knocked down by others, like, for example, when it was fighting with another animal, and they were even less than 10 tefachim is a problem, and then you have the different dinim involving the thieves and the shlach toys and so on and so forth. Now, let's talk about what needs to be checked in an animal that fell. When we talk about an animal that fell, you have to check in the area of its stomach and its intestines. You have to make sure, for example, we learned before, nikra roivach etzona, that, for example, if most of the peritoneum was damaged, then the animal is going to be trefa. Or you have, for example, nikra dakin, you could have, for example, that the intestines have a hole or something, so therefore, Amemar is telling us, in the name of Reb Dimi, you would have to check for those kinds, and you'd have to check for those kinds of things. There are other Rishonim who learn that it means that you would have to check other internal organs as well. Mazutra, however, Mazutra says to Amema, no, Hoki Aminim, Shmeid Rapapa. You should know we learn in the name of Rapapa. It's not just good enough to check the digestive system. Tzricha Bedikas, Keneged Beis HaCholol Kolay, you actually have to check the entire inside of the animal. So you have to check the ribs, and you have to check the spine and so forth. Not just good enough to check the digestive system. Okay, the Gemara says Omalei Huna Ma, and that's the halacha. Omalei Huna Ma Brabreider of Nechemya Ravashi. So Huna Ma, the grandson of Nechemya, asked Ravashi, Simonim Mai, would we also have to check the Simonim? If an animal fell and with this kind of thing, would we have to check whether the simonim would dislocate, whether the windpipe and the esophagus were dislocated, or would we have to check whether they were damaged in the fall as well? Amalei said, Ravashi says, no, simonim koshen heinetz on the filler, those are considered hard and resilient relative to a fall, and therefore those things you wouldn't have to check. So you do have to check basically from head to toe, but you don't have to check the simonim themselves, just other organs that may get damaged or crushed by a fall from a height like that. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omer of Yehuda Amashmul, Oif Shenechba Dapnei Amayim, suppose that a bird bangs into the surface of the water. So let's say, so till now we've been talking about animals, birds primarily we're going to talk about later in the parak, but here the Gemara brings a din that's relevant to birds. So if you have a bird fell onto the water, now of course if a bird lands normally on the water, then of course it's gonna slow down and land normally on the water. But let's say, for example, Rashi says, let's say the bird's wings were tied and it fell and it fell from a height onto the water. So now you have a problem. So it fell out korchoi. So an example would be, let's say, for example, that its wings were tied or whatever. The Meiri, in fact, points out, with an animal, you wouldn't be concerned if it fell into the water. It's not that hard an impact. But a bird being smaller, then maybe even the water would be a problem with an impact. And in fact, you also have dinim where a person threw it and it didn't have a chance to spread its wings, etc. Anyway, so the din is, kivin sheshot maloi kemosei dayoi. If then the bird is able to swim along the surface of the water, the length of its body, then that's good enough. In other words, the same way as with an animal, you need for it to walk, and then there's no problem. With a bird, the equivalent is to be able to swim its own body, at least its own body length. However, the Gemara points out, v'lo yamon elam imat l'mayla. However, that would only apply if it's going from below to above, meaning against the current, then it shows that it still is able to swim under its own independent power. Avam l'mayla l'mata, but if you see it going with the current, then that doesn't mean anything. Mayo d'ashpalu, it means that the water is carrying it along. It doesn't show that it has the strength to be able to swim by itself. The imaya kaimi, but if it's still water, like in a pond, less than bar, then there's no problem because it doesn't matter with the current or against it, because then obviously it means means that it's able to swim independently, in any direction that it does. So that would be fine, in other words, and therefore you're good, and as long as it's able to go its full body length, then you're fine, and then you're fine, and the bird is for sure kosher. Achronim point out, I mean, you know, there's not even talk about Milo Mata above or below when you're talking about still water. So one explanation is, in fact, that it means, so the Beis Yosef says that actually what it means is, even if the bed of the pond is deeper on one side, nevertheless, it's fine. But then the Marshal says in Yamshel Shloima, what do you mean? It doesn't matter. The fact is, the surface of the water is the same height regardless. So he says what it means is in other words, that's what it means. It doesn't mean that you would think from the previous Gemara, only if it goes against the current, then is it kosher. He was saying, even though there's no current, it's also fine. So as long as it goes, it's full body length, then you're fine. And the Gemara continues, V'ishodetzivi, where here's another way you can test. If you throw like a piece of wood, for example, into the water, the kadme, and you see that the bird goes faster than the piece of wood, hokadme, then you know it went ahead of it. So it's obviously, even if it's going with the current, it still means it's going under its own power and not just the current. Okay. The Gemara continues, glima masiach, what happens if you have a piece of cloth stretched out And now a bird fell on it, so now it's stretched out. It's stretched out. There's not much give to it. So there's, again, the potential problem of risuke burning. Deloy mosiah, but if it's not so tightly stretched, loy chashin, and then we're not going to be concerned because then the fact that it's not so tightly stretched means there's a give to it, so therefore it'll give, and the animal and the bird won't suffer such a strong blow. Also ufa ma'ufa loy chashin, and then also if the cloth is folded and refolded. And then it's stretched out over there, then it's also not a problem, even if it's stretched out, because once it's folded, it's not going to be stretched so tightly, and therefore there's not going to be a problem of such a hard impact. What about another din? Isla, if you have a net spread out for the bird, or mikarvi kitri, if the knots of the net are very close together, kashin, and then we have to be concerned of risuk evarim. Loi makarvi kitri, but if the knots are not quite so close together, loi kashin, and then we don't have to be concerned, because then there's not much of an impact. Another din, kitna d'ovid betuni. If you have flax that's tied up in bundles, kashin, and then we're concerned about that, because those are fairly stiff. The high gisa, but on the other hand, if the bird falls on one side of the, doesn't fall directly onto the middle of the bundle, but rather onto one side of it or the other side of it, loy chashin, and then there's not such concern, because again, then the impact is not that strong. Isuraisa, what about if you have bundles of reeds, chashin, and then again, you're concerned. Kitna, the daik v'nuf, it's loy chashin. But if you have flax that was already combed, that was already pounded and combed, so now it's not in stalks anymore. Now it's the actual flax itself. Loy chashin, and then we're not concerned, because again that has a give to it, and therefore it'll cushion the blow. Dayak l'nafitz, on the other hand, if it's only been pounded to remove the stalks that it grows in, but you haven't yet combed it. So now the problem is you haven't combed it, so you still have pieces of the of you still have pieces of the of the of so flat flax grows in stems, in hard stems. So if you don't have it combed out, then you still have pieces of the stems over there, chashin, and then we do have to be concerned, because those hard pieces can still cause an impact. The ovid bizri, but if it's bundled in small bundles, kiven isbe kitri. Now at that point you have knots over there, so now the knots themselves are hard, and then we have to be concerned about risuke varim. What about dakta? What about if the bird falls on the pile of broken stems themselves? You have the, again, after you beat the flax and break the stems, and then afterwards you comb out the stems. If you have a pile of stems over there that are lying there, and the bird falls on those, chayshin, and then we have to be concerned about risuke varim. Dakta, but if they've been broken into tiny little slivers, loy chashin, and then we're not concerned, because then already if it's in tiny slivers, even though it's a pile of it, then it'll be soft enough, and it'll cushion the blow. Navra, here's another one. What if the bird falls onto navra, which is a type of ivy that grows around palm trees? Chayshinan, then we're concerned about that. Actually, Rashi explains navra is not really ivy. I said it wrong. Navra, Rashi explains, is a substance that grows around palm trees, like the bark or something, and then you dry it. You make it into strips, and they use it for making rope. Until it's made into rope, it's very, very stiff. It's very, very hard. And again, if now the bird falls onto that, then you have a problem of risuke devarim. Kimchosa, but if you have after it's been broken up into strips, then it's softer. Loy chashin, and so then we're not concerned. Another case, kitma nehila, if it fell onto sifted ashes, chashin, and then we're concerned, because once they're sifted, then it makes a hard pile. Loy nehila, but if the ashes haven't been sifted, loy chashin, then we're not concerned, because then a pile of ashes like that still has air between the pieces, and therefore there's no problem of risuke varim. Also, chol hadak loy chashin, if it falls onto fine sand, then there's no problem of risuke varim, because then the fine sand will cushion the blow. Chol hagas chashin, but if it's on coarse sand, then it's a harder impact, and then we're concerned about risuke varim. So, What else? Ovok drochem falls on the dust of the road, so that also gets pressed down by all the foot traffic on there, so therefore it becomes very hard. Chayshinam, then we have to be concerned about rusik evarim. When it comes to coarse sand, also Rashi points out, it's not just sand, you also have those pebbles mixed in it. So therefore, it's more like gravel. So therefore, there's more of a concern. And avak drachim, okay, you don't have pebbles in it necessarily, but it's been pressed down by all the foot traffic. Tivnov ovid bizaga. Similarly, if you have a bundle of straw that's been made into a bundle. So then also Chayshinim were concerned about Risuke Varim because again it's a very stiff bundle and there's no give to it. Loy Ovid Bizaga, but if the straw has not been made into bundles, Loy Chayshinim, then we're not concerned about it because then it means that it'll cushion the fall. Fiti v'chod minayhu, as far as wheat or anything similar to wheat, any kind of grain like that, Chayshinan, then we're concerned. The grains themselves are stiff, and the pile of them as a whole is stiff. Sari, v'chod minayhu, but if it's barley or anything similar to barley, then we're also Chayshinan. We're also concerned about Risuke Varim. There was a different gear, so that we shouldn't have Loy Chayshinan, that they were not concerned about that, meaning because, in other words, the idea would be that barley and other things similar to that are less stiff, and the bird will like slide off them, and the fall will be cushioned a little bit, and it'll slide, and it won't be so hard. A few more. The Gemara says, "Kolmine kitnis and v'am mishum risuke varim." Any kind of beans, if a bird lands on a pile of them, there's no problem of risuke varim because beans are slippery and therefore it cushions the fall. Levamin rubia, with the except for rubia, which is Rashi translates rubia as tiltan, which is fenugreek. It's also called chilba. They use a lot in Yemenite cooking. Some identify rubia as black-eyed peas. So whatever the case, those are different, and those there would be a problem with risuke varim. Similarly, chimsi. What about chimsi? Rashi says are peas. And when mishum risuke varim, there's no problem with risuke varim because they don't get pressed together; they slide one off the other. Chifti, but when it comes to chifti, which are chickpeas, yes, when mishum risuke varim, then there's risuke varim because since they're not round, they have a different shape to them, so therefore they can tend to stick together and not slide one easily off another. Kolda de Milsa, so the Gemara summarizes, the bottom line is, as far as these rules, we're not going to start listing every substance in the world, but in general, the rule is Kolmid de Mishrik, anything where the pieces of it will slide easily one way relative to the other. There's no problem if a bird falls in it, because, in other words, then the fact that they can slide one relative to the other will cushion the blow. The Rashba brings that if they're in a keli and then they can't slide, then there's a problem even with the ones we said. But there's no problem because since they're in a keli and the keli holds them in place, then therefore there is more of a concern of something that it fell on something hard. So in other words, Tosfos says kitnis means other kinds of things. Kitnis, then what we said before, there's no problem of risuke varim, would be things like, for example, lentils or rice or millet or whatever, as opposed to, we're talking about specifically over here, peas and chickpeas. So kolmid de mashrik, anything where it slides one relative to another, ein mishum risuke varim, then there's no problem of risuke varim, loy mashrik, but if it doesn't slide, if they tend to hold together firmly, yesh mishum risuke varim, then there is the problem if a bird falls in it of risuke varim, because then there's nothing to cushion the blow, and therefore its internal organs may be damaged, and then again you have these rules that we said before about 24 hours, and if it stands or if it walks, or in the case of a water bird, if it's able to swim its full body length. So those are the basic dinim of that, and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with other dinim of Nefula and of Risuke Varim and all that.